with Truth News Radio Australia. Well, folks, in the second hour of today's show, I want to engage with a variety of interconnected issues, crises that are taking place in the world, a number of them regional crises, and I want to just kind of go through with you some of the topics I want to cover in the next hour with my guest who is about to join us. We've got a crisis in Syria. We have a crisis in Iraq. We have a crisis in Gaza. We have a crisis in the Ukraine. And we've got a simmering, a very volatile situation in Libya. All of these situations are seemingly distinct, seemingly disconnected, yet there is something that joins them all together, something that they all have in common. And that is, of course, it is the machinations of the controllers of the so-called New World Order, call it what you will, the forces who are somewhat hidden from us because we don't really know who they are. We know who their puppet leaders are. We know how they manifest their agenda, and we have a rough idea of what they're trying to do, but they operate in secret. Now, I've got my guest for the second hour coming on to talk about this, Mimi Alaham, been on the show a couple of times. Mimi is an independent researcher, journalist, and very well known on many alternative media outlets. And it is a great pleasure for me to welcome you back to the show, Mimi.
Ah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
It is indeed. Now, I hope you're up to the task of grappling with these many, many topics that I want to briefly address, because I know that you are someone who has a global outlook and you understand patterns and you're very interested in knowing what is going on. Of course, you're a native of Syria, and I do want to focus on Syria, but I want to try and grapple with what is happening globally. Well, how do you respond to that challenge?
Well, I suppose you have to really be from very many different sources of news. Yes. To try to sort of piece together what's happening, to get a feel of, and with, while considering the bias of your source.
Yes.
And then you have to put events that might not seem related together. And I think once you do that, you realize that the way that the economy is going, different locations that these wars are happening in Syria and in Ukraine, it seems to me that there is something going on with the two major powers, or even the three major powers, Russia, the US, and China.
Yes.
And that's what, I guess, that's the, so far how I can answer your question.
Yes.
The best I can.
I totally agree with you. I mean, this is part of a struggle for supremacy, but it may well end up being simply an endless struggle along the lines of what George Orwell predicted in 1984, in which he predicted that the world would be split up between three giant superpowers, which he defined as Eurasia, East Asia, and Oceania. I mean, it is really chilling the way we are gravitating towards this type of situation. And, you know, one of the key characteristics, Mimi, in Orwell's dystopian vision of the future was that these superstates would always be at war. They would always be lying about what they're doing. There would be no logic and no adherence to any truth other than the truth that they want you to believe at any moment in time, depending on where you are on, you know, in which supercontinent you are located. It's just sort of a very messed up, a very evil, dysfunctional planetary kind of regime. Now, I do not wish this to be the case. I do believe that those of us who are awake, those of us who understand the importance of the true meanings of liberty, of human rights, who understand it deeply, and I mean in a way that the politicians clearly don't, because the politicians merely use the superficial language of these terms. But it's up to us to actually make that real. Quick take on that from you.
Well, I wouldn't proclaim to have all of the answers and all the solutions to our problems. I can merely point out that there is a problem, and I would maybe leave it to the greater thinkers and the people to find a solution to those problems. I think about it every day, but I suppose because of the flood of information that comes in, I'm more inclined to point out that, you know, we need to be awake, at least first awake, that these problems are occurring before we can even think about a solution. And at the moment, it just seems that most of the world is just blind to them.
Yes, indeed. And that applies very strongly to our political leaders. And I just want to highlight the utter paradox of the way in which our political leaders respond to these types of situations. I've got an article here from the Courier Mail, and it has some quotes from Tony Abbott, who in the last 24 hours or so has said he wanted to sit down with Muslim leaders under the banner of what he calls Team Australia to talk about what we can all do to prevent the sort of heinous acts of terrorism and barbarity that are happening in the Middle East coming to Australia. And I'll just read a quote from that article. And he's referring here to the beheading of American journalist James Foley. It is a sign that there is an utter ruthlessness and depravity about this movement, which is hideous and sickening and deplorable. It just strengthens my resolve, and frankly, it should strengthen every Australian's resolve to do whatever we humanly can to ensure we never have the slightest hint of this kind of thing here in Australia. Now, that's a direct quote from Tony Abbott. Now, what I find incredible about this, Mimi, is that I agree with it. It's absolutely true. The words I agree with, the meanings I agree with it, but coming out of the mouth of someone who supports the ongoing Australian policy towards Syria, which has been to actually support the very same people who are perpetrating these atrocities, is incomprehensible. It's paradoxical in a way that only George Orwell, I think, could have probably grasped, because everything we are being told is the opposite of reality. In fact, the resolve of Australia and many other countries of the West has been to make sure that ISIS and ISIL and Al-Qaeda and whatever bogus name you want to call them can thrive and grow and get more money and get more arms and commit more atrocities.
Well, it's exactly double speak and double think, like Orwell described. You know, they hold two contradictory thoughts at the same time.
Yeah.
Terrorism is okay overseas, but if it comes back to Australia, then it's a problem. You know, the fact is that these ISIS terrorists are actually coming from Australia to Syria, not the other way around. I guess it's only a problem for this Australian government when they return, not when they're killing people in Syria. And the thing that interests me is that these beheadings have been going on since 2012 at the hands of the moderate rebels that the US is backing. I mean, there's many videos online where these same FSA rebels are either eating hearts or getting 10-year-olds to cut off heads. More recently, I saw one where in Daraa, which ISIS isn't even in Daraa.
Yeah.
That there was a video where they got a child to stab a prisoner to death. Mm-hmm. So none of that is in the media. None of that is mentioned by Tony Abbott.
Yeah.
Because that's going to make the U.S. And their policy and Australia's policy of following the U.S. look bad. But it's only when an American that is killed at the hands of these terrorists that it becomes a problem, because apparently our lives are not worth as much as the lives of Westerners. You know, Middle Easterners, they can, nobody's trying to block Twitter from spreading about the videos of Middle Easterners who are getting shot and beheaded. Nobody seems to care about that. But with the Muslim leaders that didn't refuse to meet with Abbott, if you just look at things a bit more closely, what he was trying to do is soften the definition of terrorism in his new law and retain internet phone data and, you know, just sort of more draconian laws. And sort of he's trying to get people's tick of approval and whatnot. It's just very ironic. It's very hypocritical, I should say, that this same man who is supporting the onslaught against Gazan children is pretending to actually thinks that he can then just talk to Australia's Muslim community. Not to say also that the Australian Muslim community has no responsibility in this, because I think especially since, you know, under the Labour Party, a lot of the politicians sort of gave them the green light to, you know, to be against this Syria and to support the Muslim Brotherhood, to support all these agendas. They just allowed them to gather donations and sort of grow. But it's the Muslim community that needs to also wake up to the fact that this element, this ISIS-supporting element, does exist within us, and we need to take care of it. I mean, we need to be actively stopping it as well. That doesn't mean signing off on draconian laws that are going to retain internet and phone data.
Sure. But of course, what you highlighted before is very important, which is that the depraved, barbaric actions are not constrained to just one little splinter group, one little group that you're going to label as ISIS or whatever. It's been typical of all of those who've been insurgents in the Syrian conflict, and it is more an aspect of the type of people that are attracted to operating as mercenaries, foreign insurgents, probably with some sort of financial gain, and you've certainly highlighted that in the past. We are going to break. I'll continue that thought after we get back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Harewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to my guest Mimi Alehem, who is a native of Syria but resides in Australia. And I was just trying to articulate there, Mimi, the point that the narrative that has been created is one which it's sort of an attractive narrative to the powers that be in the West, because it follows the pattern of what we've been hearing for decades, back to 9/11 and before 9/11, that there is, you know, certain groups of particularly evil, nasty, bad people, and now the new brand name for that has become ISIS. It used to be Al-Qaeda, but what we know is that all of the players in this, many of them are sort of careerists. They are certainly murderous psychopaths. They are depraved individuals. And the ones who are at the center of these groups almost always, and I'm sure you can clarify this for me, but there is a 100% connection, congruence between the leaders of these groups and Western intelligence operatives and handlers, including CIA, Mossad, MI5, etc.
Well, it's not even a theory. You know, it's a proven fact that a lot of these terrorists that are picked up and taken to prison somehow turn out to be part of MI5 or MI6 or the CIA. And if you more recently, you could take the example of Eric Haroon, the American who was with Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria, Jabhat al-Nusra being one of the factions of Al-Qaeda, or so it was labeled. And his father went on the air and said, well, my son's not a terrorist. He's actually with the CIA. And, you know, he's supposedly now has overdosed on drugs in his home.
Yeah,
that's what the media said. We never saw a dead body. We never really saw interviews with the family. We never saw like a report by the from the autopsy. So who knows? Perhaps he's been reassigned. There's a lot. Why wouldn't you try to infiltrate these groups? Even the if you recall the leaked conversation in the Turkish war room recently with Erdogan's generals and ministers, they were talking about ISIS and how it's very easily manipulated, and they were talking about using it for a false flag operation that would then help them intervene inside Syria.
Yes.
So it's definitely factual. And also, just if you don't even want to consider those bits of evidence that come up now and then, if you look at the bigger picture, you know, what has ISIS done and what have these groups done? Number one, they've provided a casus belli to invade these countries like Afghanistan and Iraq. And even though there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the idea of Al-Qaeda was still used there. You know, Yemen's getting droned. They provide like a proxy army, like they did in Libya, like they've done in Syria. And now, you know, in Iraq, even the US decided they no longer liked their puppet Maliki. They needed a replacement. And they said that we're not going to, basically it was like putting a gun to Iraq's head with all these ISIS terrorists running around. And they said, we're not going to stop them unless you get rid of Maliki. And then Maliki got switched. And if you, again, to look at their plans from 2006, like Joe Biden, they've had the intention to balkanize the countries in the Middle East and to make them into smaller sectarian-based statelets. And it follows that ISIS is allowed to be in Mosul, but they're not allowed to be in Erbil. You know, once they cross that red line where their border for the Kurdistan is drawn, then the US will do something about it. But the idea is they want to create a Sunni middle in Iraq, a Kurdish north, and a Shiite south. And they would like to do something similar in Syria with the Kurdish north and a Christian Alawite coast and, you know, a ISIS middle bit, basically, which they can then airstrike later on and use it as an excuse to intervene later on and just keep the chaos going. They create the chaos. They want to keep it going, and they want to make sure that there's not a nation state in the region that is capable of standing up for itself, standing up for its control of its own resources, and threatening Israel, basically.
Great summary there. And as someone who's living in Australia, how do you feel about... You see, my concern about this is, as an Australian, I can't simply stand back and say, well, that's just something that's happening on the other side of the world, really nothing to do with us, which is what a lot of people say because they are completely tuned out to the reality. They are completely, I would say, deliberately ignorant. They don't want to face it. Australia is a key player in all of this. I mean, Australia has always been an important player in the machinations of these New World puppeteers. How do you feel about Australia? I just put a question to you about Syria, because as far as I know, we currently have no diplomatic relations with Syria. Is that correct? Because I know back under, I think it was under Kevin Rudd, I think we expelled the Syrian ambassador. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's right. Absolutely. We did expel the Syrian ambassador. The embassy is closed. The only thing that's open right now is a consulate that's led by someone with Australian citizenship that has, you know, links and correspondences overseas. But there's no that's just for people who need visas and need to get home. It has nothing, in fact, to do with relations between the Australian and Syrian government. So the Australian government just towed the line completely with the US and with the desires of, you know, UK, US and Israel, and just cut off any sort of relation with the Syrian government.
Incredible, isn't it? At the very time when the government there was trying to deal with these evil people that are now putting heads on stakes and cutting hearts out, they wanted to deal with it, and we could have actually helped Syria to deal with that, to prevent that cancer growing and then spreading into Iraq. Instead, and just taking the quote again, the resolve of Tony Abbott, the resolve to do whatever we humanly can to ensure we never have the slightest hint of this kind of thing here in Australia. Well, what did the Australian government do? They expelled the Syrian ambassador and virtually just aligned themselves with the full evil depravity of which Tony Abbott is now saying, I don't know, I just feel like I'm in a nut house. I don't know.
Yes.
Mimi?
I think it feels like you're taking crazy pills, really. Because how could anyone be so blind to the duplicity of what he's saying and the position the Australian government has? I mean, I've actually been saying it, you know, for a while, like on the Insights program in 2012, when I said that Syria is going to end up being another Afghanistan, Al Qaeda's in Syria, and they asked about what will happen when, you know, Australians go to fight in Syria and come back, and I said it was going to be a problem for them, you know, and they should support the military and secure Syria's borders, because, you know, if you're going to fund a Islamist thinking insurgency and you're going to open up the borders to Syria and from Turkey, and you're going to destabilize the country and undermine the military and security, you're basically creating fertile ground for something like this to grow. And now they turn around and say what a terrible thing it is and how we don't want this here. So why do we want it there? You know, why do we have to suffer? Why is that okay? Why is it that when the journalists think that the US Air Force is airstriking ISIS, they become like precision strikes? But when the Syrian Air Force is airstriking ISIS, you either don't hear about it at all, or they say that they're killing civilians.
So there's a massacre. Indeed, we're just going to break. I'm talking to Mimi Alahem, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. We'll be right back. back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, talking to my guest, independent journalist and very, very deep thinker on international affairs, Mimi Alahem, known on YouTube as Syrian Girl. A couple of other points I wanted to make about Australia's complicity in all this, Mimi, for your comment. One, of course, we now have a seat on the UN Security Council, a non-permanent seat on the UN Security Council, which makes Australia a major player in international affairs. Secondly, the incredible posturing of Tony Abbott towards Russia, the incredibly aggressive stance that Tony Abbott took, I think, again, encouraged by the fact that we do have this seat on the Security Council, it appears that Australia is sort of almost being used as the tip of the spear.
Well, you could think psychologically, of it that way. I mean, sometimes I think that Australia is so deeply invested in impressing their US and Israeli allies that they even sometimes go above and beyond the call of duty in pandering to their every whim, and at the detriment to Australia and Australians as well, because yes, they are facing these problems now, and there's going to be, you know, you might even consider that it may, I'm not absolutely certain, but consider that perhaps economically Australia would be better aligned with, say, China. I mean, they manufacture and we've got a lot of resources, but I get the feeling that in a lot of cases, any country that cuts against the grain or tries to step out of the control of the US then just becomes a rogue state, and then it's basically destroyed and everybody inside it is killed and turned into second-class human citizens and, you know, murdered. So it's I think an element of it is also fear of the consequences of standing up for what's right when it comes to, you know, the United States.
Yes, certainly. I actually have some misgivings about China. I think that in the current situation, Australia is somewhat the meat in the sandwich between China and the US. And in many ways, we have also acquiesced to being carved up by China in a number of ways, but our leaders do it while at the same time paying obeisance to the US. It's as if they can't decide, you know, which. Well, at the moment they're pretty firmly backing America, but the point is that that they actually do have to bend over for China as well, and of course the Chinese are behaving quite deplorably in an economic sense towards Australia, and our economy is really suffering from the importation of Chinese slave labor workers, and we as a nation get very little benefit from the huge wealth that is owed to us from the export of our mineral resources to China. It's all been set up to basically just impoverish us, and this has nothing to do with the Chinese people. This has, no, of course, has nothing to do with the United States people either. We're talking here about the very rich, powerful people, the elites who control entire supercontinents. And the way I see it playing out, it could well be that as this conflict, this Cold War, heats up between the power blocks of the US, China, and Russia, we could simply be a casualty. And I believe it could happen far quicker than what people realise. We have had a very lucky run. We've been spoiled all our lives in Australia. You, on the other hand, Mimi, you've seen what happens to countries that are not so lucky.
Yeah, well, they do call it the lucky country, and it has been lucky so far. But like you said, that luck might run out. And it's a very interesting point you made about, you know, China exploiting our resources. The thing is, every country is probably, you know, the way that nation states works, and it's just as Orwell described, the state exists only for the state alone, and they do whatever is in their benefit. And right and wrong and people as a whole, it just doesn't matter at all.
Yes.
And for me at the moment, and I'm not sure if this will change in future, but I'm getting closer to the conclusion that a nation, to be able to stand up for its own rights, has to achieve total self-sufficiency, or at least something close to it. And that includes being able to protect itself.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if, you know, that is the correct way to go. It just, that's what seems to me at the moment, at my age and what I've seen from the world.
Yes, self-sufficiency, we should be able to produce our own food, and we certainly should be able to defend our own borders rather than engaging in projection of force across the other side of the world.
That's the thing, you know, it's so unnecessary for Australia to have soldiers in anywhere all over the world, Afghanistan, Africa. It's really unnecessary, but the only reason they do it is because to provide target support to the US that has so many military bases here.
Yes.
And which they rely upon for protection. I mean, if Australia could defend itself, theoretically we wouldn't have to lose anybody. Nobody would have to die, you know? Could be something like Switzerland.
Indeed, it could be a Switzerland of the Southern Hemisphere, and we've got so much going for us. There is so much potential, but we are so let down by the entire class of political leaders, but by the whole class of political commentators and by the media. It's just, I don't know. It's a very, very difficult situation. May I ask you, Mimi, about Syria? Are you getting news from Syria? Do you have contacts, friends, family there? Can you tell us anything about what's life like in Syria right now for people?
I think it definitely depends on where you live.
Yeah.
I do have contacts and friends there. In some areas, life is almost absolutely normal.
Yeah.
And in others, it's hell on earth, in the sense that in Aleppo, they've had the insurgents cut off the water to that city and 2 million people. And as far as I know, it's been going on for 2 months. And as far as I know, it's still going. So that means that for 2 million people who are inside an industrial city, that everybody has internet access, there's cafes, you know, it's quite normal, like any other European city. Mm. But they turn on the tap and water doesn't come out. They want to flush the toilet, there's no water. You know, they have to go out into wells and collect the water in buckets, because Al-Qaeda has decided to siege the government-held areas, which are growing. I know that that Aleppo, the insurgents there are on the back foot because the army is advancing. And if you go towards Damascus, life is almost normal, except for every now and then there's a car bomb, there's a mortar strike. And now, just recently, the army has finally broke through the lines and took over a small town on the outskirts that was one of the towns that was ditching mortars over into the city. So that is quite hopeful for Damascus. And I've heard from my family members that things have quietened down, although there was a car bomb that didn't kill anybody just yesterday. But I know also in Homs, you know, Homs used to be the center where the insurgency was. Now everybody's sort of gone back to their homes and back to their daily lives. But every now and then, there's a car bomb that kills 20, 50, 100 people. And that's what Iraq had for a while. You know, that's the sort of thing that the instability that Iraq had. And you know, it begs the question that why are only Iraqis dying? You know, what is the purpose of that? And it's basically to keep the chaos going and to make sure people don't feel like Syria is a safe place to go for a visit. It crushes the economy.
Absolutely. We're just going to break. We're talking to Nimi Elohim, and you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. We will be right back. Radio Australia. And my guest today is Nimi Elohim, who we have been I've been chatting with about the situation in Syria, but the entire kind of global conflagration that involves many regional conflicts. But what I wanted to ask you, Nimi, is one, these regional conflicts, are they going to somehow join up? Are we going to end up with a giant war in that part of the world? And I can imagine one scenario that would make that happen, which would be where a nation state or maybe a group like Hezbollah decides to go up against Israel in a serious way, which would then force various players in that region to take sides. And then you would end up with that war that everyone's kind of been fearing, which then could mushroom into a world war.
I think that there was a huge risk of that in August in 2013.
Yeah.
When the US had its warships, the US and Russia had its warships on the coast of Syria. And then, of course, you know, if that happened, then Hezbollah would have attacked Israel, Iran would have, you know, then also intervened, Jordan would collapse. And I think a part of the reason that the US also didn't, you know, wasn't prepared for something like that to happen is because of the fear of what will happen to Israel and Jordan. And they would rather boil the frog, so to speak. They'd rather get a victory with minimal risk. However, if you consider that the frog might not want to be boiled, or, you know, maybe too clever. NATO still exists, and NATO was designed to contain Russia and its borders. Russia had something equivalent, Warsaw, which, of course, they disbanded. But if you look at what's happening to Russia now, its borders are basically being squeezed, any of its projections of power. So Ukraine was part of that NATO treaty when the USSR broke down, was that Ukraine would remain sort of a neutral ground. But now they've got US puppets in there, so there's a war there. There was a war in Georgia on the border of Russia. Russia has its only base in the Mediterranean Sea in Syria, and that's being destabilized. So I'm not, you know, if you're trying to contain a state that has nuclear power, you know, as they say with the Russian bear, it sleeps, but when it wakes, you know, you need to stand back. And I guess it's the risk that they're doing this is to all our lives. And, you know, they could work together, but it's more like they would like to expand their power. And it's always about getting more and more power. And it doesn't matter how many people die and how many kids are bombed in the street. As long as they have more land and more resources and more power, that's what they exist for. And I'm not sure how we're going to stop that.
Yeah. And the only outcome of a conflict with Israel is going to be pretty horrendous. But, I mean, is there any other option? I mean, are the other states in that region just going to be forced sooner or later into this war? Because otherwise the war's coming to them anyway. I mean, there's no escape from it. I can't see what else can happen. I can't see any positive diplomatic or democratic way through this, unless perhaps there was a movement within Israel itself to overthrow their own racist, totalitarian, militaristic regime.
I completely and entirely agree with you. I think that there might actually be hope for that.
Yeah.
Because there's a growing minority in Israel that is opposed to the Israeli state itself. So not only left-leaning, and also, you know, there's some very, very religious Jews that are actually adhering to Judaism as it was meant to be adhered to, that reject the idea of Israel before the Messiah arrived. And they oppose, you know, and there's so many Israelis that I see that are opposed to, you know, the killing of Palestinians. Unfortunately, they're in the minority for now. But, you know, 15% of the Israeli population are actually Palestinian. And I hear the projection for the ultra-Orthodox Jews as well is 25%. They're going to be, the projected growth will be 25% of the population. So, yeah, I think that once, you know, they wake up themselves and they can overthrow their government, and, you know, I think the solution would be one state, not a two-state solution, a one-state solution where everybody is an equal citizen and it's a secular state. That is the cure for the Middle East problem.
Well, that's the model for modern democracies, isn't it? I mean, Israel is based on an archaic apartheid concept. I don't know if you heard, there was a poster, a large, very large ad that was put up in Melbourne last week by Australians for Palestine, which had Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu on it, and it had the word apartheid and then the words Free Palestine underneath. The lobby groups in Melbourne forced the council to bring that sign down. But, you know, it's just a statement of fact, isn't it? It is an apartheid state.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you just look at how people live beyond the wall, where, you know, the in the West Bank, where the wall contains the Palestinian regions, and compare that to how people live on the other side of the wall, you see a huge difference, like from going from first world to third world.
Yeah.
So I think that the lobby groups, the Israeli lobby groups in Australia, are extremely powerful. They hold most of the power and, you know, they basically a lot of the money as well. But I did want to say one thing.
Sure.
Which is just past my mind. Yes. The problem, I think, even with the pro-Palestinian groups and the Muslim groups, is that they too are easily manipulated and under propaganda.
Yes.
Because a lot of them supported the wars in Libya and Syria, you know? They somehow convinced themselves that the US can actually be a benevolent power rather than a malevolent power at times. And I think that those are the worst kind of people, and those are the ones that are bringing us down the most, more so than the apathetic, and more so even than our own enemies, because it's the enemy from within. And it's the ignorance and the opportunism of people that are basically bringing us all down.
Absolutely. The belief that if you suck up to the big power, that you'll get handouts too. And, of course, they do hand out money so widely and so lavishly. I mean, there were plane loads of money that they were sending over to Iraq. I don't know if you remember that story. There was a whole plane load of cash that disappeared in Iraq. I mean, just a staggering amount of money. And they were handing out cash to people. This is what Americans do. They just, because the US dollar is king still, so they can just go around handing out cash. And that's an incredibly powerful motivator, isn't it?
Well, they can create money out of thin air, can't they?
Indeed. Because of their global hegemony, the dollar is still respected and, under pressure, but still, it still has that force behind it.
I know that they paid a lot of, they pay people to defect or to betray their country. They paid the insurgents $150 a day to fight. So, It's just the wonder how ISIS could suddenly become so strong. It's just a wonder where all the money comes from. And I think that if the United States didn't want that to happen, it probably wouldn't.
What's your take on the Gaza situation? What's your view on Hamas, Mimi? How do you see Hamas? Do you see Hamas as being the legitimate representative of the aspirations of the people in Gaza, or do you see Hamas as being somewhat a co-opted organization with perhaps some leaders who aren't totally what they seem to be?
That's a very good question. Yeah. You know, one thing you have to also note is that Hamas actually stood by Qatar against Syria, even though even though Syria was committed to a resistance movement against Israel, whoever would stand with Syria, Syria would stand with them.
Yes.
So Hamas basically betrayed Syria. And the thing is, though, you know, I support the idea of resistance.
Yes.
But I'm more prone to supporting secular resistance movements that aren't religiously based, that are nationalist based.
Yes.
And Hamas isn't that. I think that the history of Hamas, if you do look back, it was started off by Israel to sort of undermine the secular Palestinian Liberation Organization and all sorts of other secular groups in the area. I think, however, you know, I have to differentiate between Hamas leaders, Hamas ideologies, and just like this, somebody in Gaza whose home has just been bombed, whose family has just been killed, who knows that Israel intends to ethnically cleanse the entire Gaza Strip, and who maybe just joined anybody who is able to resist, even the slightest bit. I do think, though, that if you compare Hezbollah's tactics that actually succeed in repelling Israel,
yes,
and you compare that to Hamas, that
yes,
sometimes they ditch rockets pointlessly, you know. It's,
yes,
it brings one to wonder sometimes who is behind the scenes.
It certainly does, doesn't it? This is something I've been talking about quite a bit on the show, because very few news sources ever discuss it. We have run to the end of the hour now. Mimi, good luck with all your future work. I know you're about to go on Press TV, so good luck with that.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope to be on again.
Absolutely. And that's another show from Truth News Radio Australia. We will be back next week. See you then.